for pain? Are you ready for suffering? If the answer is yes, then you're ready for Captain Freedom's workout.
So welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast filmed in glorious grapple vision. And tonight at the Survivor Series 88, Hulk Hogan brings down the Twin Towers.
In the Survivor Series, this fivesome, superstars one and all, are going to be facing Jake the Snake Roberts, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and company, and Bobby Heenan. You've got men involved in this. Obviously, you've got a great deal invested.
Oh, I have a lot invested. But I want you to picture something. Picture Scott Casey standing there in that ring. Picture Tito Santana standing there.
Sure.
Picture Hacksaw Duggan standing there with the Olympic strongman Ken Patera.
Sure.
And right behind him, Jake the Snake Roberts. And eventually these giant hands will be around your neck, Mr. Roberts, squeezing and squeezing and squeezing. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving dinner. It may be your last.
All right, co-captain Tito Bravo, certainly you've got to be thinking Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, it's a great event, and you're looking at seven people that are going to make the best out of it. And that's right, that's no secret. I'm coming right at you, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Because I know by humiliating you, I'm going to put a little bit of shame in every American in the United States of America.
Another one of the Bobby Heenan family members, Ravishing Rick Rude.
You know, Divothead, myself along with my partners, the eighth wonder of the world, the master of masters, Harley Race, the world's strongest man, Dino Bravo, and Mr. Perfect. We will show the world how to celebrate Turkey Day the ravishing way.
All right, things have been going pretty good thus far this Thanksgiving. They've been perfect, right, Kurt?
Absolutely perfect. And if you take a look into these eyes, you know the confidence that is built up. We have a fivesome here of the greatest multi-talented athletes in the World Wrestling Federation. I would call that the perfect combination.
All right, lastly, the comments recently of Jake the Snake Roberts, where he has indicated that Damien has been on a bit of a diet and that he could be, unlike you after a big Thanksgiving dinner, very hungry, Andre.
I don't care about that. I don't care where he is, but I know where I take my team. Last year, I take it to victory, and this year, I will do it again.
Joining me now, the team of five, co-captained by the Mega Powers and Macho Man Randy Savage. A lot of scores to be settled tonight.
Oh, yeah, the Survivor Series. Yeah, and all over the world. Yeah, people are feeling the electricity. But this team here, the Mega Powers, is bonded together.
You see one thing, Macho? When you're hot, you're hot. And when you're not, brother. How can we lose with the stuff we're going to use tonight? Isn't that right, Hill?
Okay, adding to this team of five, Hillbilly Jim.
Hootie, let me tell y'all something right now. All over this great country, it's Thanksgiving, and God bless them. America, let me tell you something, son. Them boys are going to feel the heat from this old kitchen tonight.
Whoa. Each man having his own reasons for stepping into the ring. One man in particular, the mighty Hercules.
You got that right. The mighty Hercules is always still alone, but he's found out now that he don't have to anymore. Welcome to the jungle, Million Dollar Man. With these animals beside me, you're going to find out you can't always get what you want, Ted DiBiase. You're going to get what you need, man. Yeah.
I mentioned reasons. Hulk Hogan certainly be looking for the big boss man.
Just like the 24-inch pythons are the largest arms in the world. Just like Hulkamania has ruled for five long years. There are no weak links in this chain, man. The Mega Power Team has been bonded as one, brother. Body, mind, soul, physical ability. When the mighty Hercules stood in the Pacific Ocean, when we had our seance, when we raised our hands, united ourselves as one, we were struck down as Hulkamaniacs. And I actually feel sorry for the team on the other side. Akeem, the big boss man. Haku, the red rooster, the multi-million dollar man. As far as I'm concerned, when I look across that ring, each and every one of those guys has got a dollar sign planted on their head. And each and every one of those guys looks like the big boss man. The Macho Man knows what he's got to do. We've got an aerial assault
We've got a mountain man. We've got the strongest man in the world. And what you gonna do when Hulk Hogan and the mega powers run wild on you?
Okay, so this is Survivor Series 1988 from the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio. Announcer is Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. So, yeah, another episode. How's it going, Steve?
Which one?
Oh, yeah, man, you just ruined the surprise. You haven't been here in like four episodes.
Oh, no, okay.
Hey, V1, how's it going?
Not too bad.
And here comes a returning character at a Royal Rumble 2002. It's Mr. OOC.
All right.
The COO of... OSW.
Yeah, why not? You got a stage walk, isn't it?
You guys all watch the Silver Vision version?
Yep.
Well, you have to, because it came. I couldn't find the. Unfortunately, couldn't get our hands on the WWE Anthology version, but it's probably for the best in this case.
Probably.
Alright, so we get a cold open. There's no WWF Top Gun signature. Just the Survivor Series logo and Cut the Mean Gene welcoming us before getting right into it.
Okay. Skyrim logo.
Just for this week.
Alright, so we got tag team action. 10-man tag team action. Yeah, so their heels are out first, led by co-captains, the tag team champions, Demolition, and their awesome team. Introducing the Conquistadors, who are... If you care. It's
Edge Christian.
it's like Rene Dupree and Eugene, actually.
Oh, God.
Jose Luis Rivera and Jose Estrada Sr., the father of Jose Estrada in Los Barriquas in 98. The Bolsheviks with Slip, which is Nikolai Volkov and Boris Dukov. The Brainbusters, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, that's one half of the Four Horsemen, with Bobby Heenan, and the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers with Jimmy Hart.
Why was Slick with the Russian lads? It makes no sense.
Oh, it's one of those, he's a heel manager, so it's just, here you go, here's, we're delineating your heel and Bobby Heenan's not taking it on.
Back in the day, sure, there was just a manager had random wrestlers, like, and it was just... the way it was.
Why would, I suppose it's true.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I was thinking, why would Heenan take on Ken Patera for a little bit? Like,
but, why would anyone take
why
on?
Would
anyone
take
on? Well, because maybe they don't want the brick thrown through their window.
Oh, God. All right, so they're taking on the face team of the team leaders, the Powers of Pain, Barbarian Warlords, who are now higher on the tag team total pole than the rest of these guys, the Young Stallions, Paul Roma and Jim Powers, the Hart Foundation, Bret Nandel. The Rockers, who are debuting, former two-time AWA champions, as the Midnight Rockers from AWA. And the British Bulldogs, and Cunt Dynamite, and...
with his awesome pedo patch, did you see it? There's the children around the world quivering. It was this the Rockers' first time in the WWF, or was it their pay-per-view debut?
Pay-per-view debut. They would have been doing some house shows beforehand, but this is their big pay-per-view debut. Actually, they...
Great song.
They were actually signed about a year ago from the AWA. And
in 2010?
In 1987, and they went out to a bar and trashed the hotel bar and got immediately fired afterwards, so they went back to AWA for a year and then got called up again. Actually, yeah, Brainbusters from, because they're with Bobby the Brain Heenan, and they do the Brainbuster. So they're part of the Four Horsemen in the NWA for over 2 years at this point. They left the NWA, dropped tag belts to the Midnight Express. Not the new Midnight Express, the old Midnight Express. Dan Lane and Bobby Eaton, before signing with the Fed in September. And like the manager of the Four Horsemen, J.J. Dillon, he'd come in 5 months later, sign with the Fed. Do you know his real name is Jim Morrison? J.J. Dillon.
I did not know that.
Yes, there you go. Maybe, never mind.
And J.J. Dillon, that was the guy who was set to take charge of WWF if Vince went down for the riots, right?
Very good, yeah. He was got a prominent role in the front office when he came in. All right, should we get started on this match? I love you,
whatever.
This match, there's only four matches on this pay-per-view, but only two of the matches, you know, this pay-per-view is only 2 hours long, but... only the opening match here, the tag match, and the main event were intact.
No.
The other two were cut to shit.
Main event was definitely cut, but it just wasn't cut as badly.
Oh, okay. because we're definitely missing.
They cut the wrong match.
Yes, yes. They cut the wrong. This one went, 42 minutes or something?
Hold on. Now, you warned me about the match, but I found it actually, I know it was incredibly long, could have been 15, 20 minutes, but it wasn't that excruciating.
Oh, I was pulling hair by the end of this.
Was that because of the length of it, though, or because of what was happening in the ring?
I think they're both.
I think a mixture, yeah, because it just, the match didn't make sense, because you'd have the heels beating, the faces battering the heels for long portions of it and stuff like that, and I don't know, I absolutely hated it.
With 20 people in the match, there's no real story that's told. It's just come in for a few minutes, change, come in for a few minutes. You know.
They coped with the sheer numbers of people that were blocking the action from last year. Because remember in the 10-man tag match, we were just flipping out. And this year, they just kind of raised the camera a bit so you could actually see a bit more of the action.
As opposed to the crotch shots between the legs.
So, you know, kudos there, but I don't know. 20 men in a tag match is just bad.
But one thing I did notice, and we say it all the time, but that was 10 tag teams that were all had a gimmick.
Yeah.
They all had a name. They were all wearing the same ring attire, bar I think the Brain Busters were wearing slightly different, but that's fantastic.
It was amazing, and it was just as good as last year's, you know? But did you notice that not one face team had a manager?
Mm.
Yeah, it's just really smart booking. Like, only heels have managers. I thought that was awesome.
Are there any face managers?
I know. Other than Liz, I don't think so.
What about your man Arnold Skoland? But that was before.
He wouldn't be. He was gone too at stage, wouldn't he?
Busy on the sites, you know.
He was in the pile driver video. Like.
Oh, yeah.
You thought of Brett Sean DVD. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Sean mentions that when they were in the AWA, it was brilliant that they were small guys and they were fast because they could sell for the heels really well, and so they could get sympathy really good. So they were loved in AWA, and when they came to the Fed, it was a problem because they were so small. So they had to overcome that. So.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I thought Jannetty was by far the best wrestler in that match. He did a beautiful hip toss counter at one point. And another where nice double team sunset flip over the ropes into a pin. Beautiful. I was very impressed with Jannetty, you have to say.
Cool. I will second that. As a kid, I always loved Marty more than Sean. But watching this, he was a damn good worker. And
bumping like crazy.
Yeah. And did you notice that I think it was quite early on in the match that HBK did the Daniel Bryan spot, where someone whiffs him into the turnbuckle and he kind of, you know, runs up them and does the backflip as Jitter Guy runs in, but it was nowhere near as good as Daniel Bryan's. I just thought I'd say that.
Alright. Hitman telegraphs a back body drop and gets a small package eliminating Ray Rougeau. Do you remember last time we were talking about the Rougeaus and Dynamite, that the Rougeaus thought the Bulldogs cut up their clothes and, you know, it was Henny. Dynamite knocked the shit out of both of them and then Jacques came back and knocked Dynamite's teeth out.
Oh, that's where he puts a roll of quarters, doesn't it?
Yeah. Vince got hold of them and said, listen, both of you stop it immediately. What happens was, since then, even though they were both tag teams and they both were trying to work a program with each other, just kept them apart. And after this show, Dynamite and Bulldog are gone from the WWF and the Rougeaus stay.
There's a lot of that happening in all of these shows. Yeah. It's just constant walking out, people coming back, leaving. It's just, wrestling was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what we're missing. Something that they have when they say, bring the Attitude Era back and blah, blah, blah. Besides the amazing talent pool, is that since you had two big companies, you didn't know who's going to walk in the door next.
And yeah.
If they're a big talent, they can go face everyone on the roster because all fresh matches. And just don't get that today. So the Rougeaus leave the building immediately. They don't grab their bags. They don't change. Just get the fuck out of town until the Bulldogs are gone from the WWF.
I did not know that. Did you cop that when Brett got tagged in just prior to pinning? Was it Raymond?
Yeah.
He got the biggest pop of the whole match. Just, I think we actually made note there in the last show that we've kind of seen just Brett kind of, you know, slowly move up the card and get more popular and get more solid as a worker. You could really see just here that the fans absolutely adored him. And, you know, in the midst of a sea of 20 men and, you know, that Brett gets the biggest pop is definitely says a lot, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you book or even call a match like this? You know, I mean, at least in the Rumble, there's comings and goings, you know? But, I mean, what? Like, how do you stop it turning into a clusterfuck? which in fairness, it was actually decently structured. For all its faults, it didn't really, until obviously the very end, turn into a complete clusterfuck.
I'll give you that it was structured, it just wasn't that interesting.
No, exactly. As well, why are pinfalls never broken up in a Survivor Series match?
Very respectful competitors. You're on your own. You have to go kick out yourself. Yeah. I guess another staple of the 80s.
Powers of Pain. So, but I assume that was Vince's take on the Road Warriors, yeah?
Yeah, as well as Demolition.
As just Demolition.
So that's what
I'm the Legion of Doom.
So, they were teasing a feud with Powers of Pain and Demolition, yeah, but very strong indeed. Jim Powers, yeah, he was eliminated by Zukov, rolling through a very hesitant crossbody.
Jim Powers should have been in the Powers of Pain. That guy is fucking huge.
He'd be the Jim Powers of Pain. Actually, this is the last pay-per-view appearance of the Young Stallions. Apparently, they hated each other off-screen.
Oh.
They split before WrestleMania 5 next year, and both become jobbers in between, and join the Four Horsemen. I see the workhorse bunch.
Did you notice Demolition, essentially their go-to spot was clubbing blows to the back? Just constant.
Yeah.
The axe handle smash.
And if there's one thing I know about them, and I don't know if this is praise or not, but Smash was definitely the workhorse of that group, because Axe had nothing. He had no moves, he had no charisma, but Smash was in the match every 10 seconds.
Oh, he was probably off the timekeeper who's getting his dialysis between tags. So Bulldog botches a flare bump after a poor back body drop earlier. And there was a great wrong corner spot by the Conquistador, right? He goes to the wrong corner. He's like, oh, where am I? Oh, I got the tag. It was great. So Brett hits a German, but the ref counts his shoulders to the mat. So he's out. And then the Rockers and the Brainbusters get double DQ'd. Oh, no jobs for either of you. So we got Demolition.
Which was fine, because they were both feuding with each other. That makes sense in the long term.
And it shortened the match somewhat.
Yeah.
And so we got Demolition and the Conquistadors versus the Bulldogs and the Powers of Pain. So Smash delivers a clothesline to Dynamite. He had some nice offense, actually, before that. He's out.
I was very confused at the finish initially, and I'm still pretty confused, but
It's quite the precursor to WrestleMania 13.
Brett and Austin have nothing on this. This was amazing.
I have a few issues with it, but
Joe, why don't you just go?
Go through it.
So then. Fuji stands on the apron for like an ice age, and inadvertently causes Smash to fall out of the ring.
Axe was the
Yes.
He fell out of the ring, back into the ring, and then out of the ring again. So they had their little tussle at ringside. I don't know why Axe and Smash didn't go mental at Fuji and start kicking the crap out of him, but you know. At one point, Axe, he just pushes Fuji, turns around and starts walking away. Why'd you do that? Fuck you, man. And then Fuji whacks him with the cane, and then we all know what happened.
Then Fuji and Axe argue until Demolition are counted out. The Powers of Pain help Fuji to get up. Fuji helps the Powers of Pain to actually get the win, and he has the new clients. Barbarian pins the Conquistador number one at 41 minutes 35 seconds, and they're the winners and sole survivors.
And I loved when Powers of Pain or Lips Not Fusion, they start dusting off the shoulders.
That was an excellent spot. That was really good.
So Fuji swerve turns on the tag champions to side with the non-champions.
Yeah, that's my major issue with this. What is he to gain from that? Anyone?
Maybe they were like an aggregate of 20 years younger.
Well, that's definitely true. The only thing I can think of is, maybe he thought Demolition got too big for their boots or something and needed more kind of people to boss around or something and wanted these two clowns rather than, I don't know. Or just Demolition got really popular with the fans and they wanted to turn them face.
Why didn't Fuji do the swerve on Demolition during a title match with the Powers of Pain and Demolition?
Yeah.
Probably would have been smarter. Maybe he wasn't confident enough that Powers of Pain could win the Survivor Series match with nothing on the line.
And did you also notice that the fans there were so baffled by what had happened?
that they started cheering when the Powers of Pain won inside of Lippin Fuji. They had no idea that these guys are now bad.
That's because it happened to ringside. Nobody could see what even what was going on.
Like, I don't have a kayfabe reason, but I have, like, a business reason for it.
Yeah, far away.
Which is that Demolition, since they came in the Fed, they've been getting babyface pops all over their heels.
Mm.
So they wanted to change them and turn them into babyfaces, so you'll have to lose Fuji. So let's have Fuji go with these guys. And Powers of Pain work better as heels anyway, so we want them to feud, so there you go.
Yeah, that's what I reckon. You know, kind of crowd turned Demolition face. And I just like to make the note that this was the first time that we'd see a big splash from the canvas tonight. It happens many times.
Alright, so overall, how was this match? I found it was it zapped the life out of me. I needed a break after this match.
I'd say this match, I fucking hated it. It was probably 20 minutes too, well, I'd say maybe 15 minutes too long. And those 15 minutes just... each second made it worse for me. I hated it. I hated it.
Steve, bring us up here.
I contend that it was the best match of the night.
Hold on.
Now, as I said, the length really kills it, but the actual in-ring action, in my opinion, is far superior to any of the other three matches. I thought the other... Okay. Well, we'll get to that, but... I was pleasantly surprised with what I saw in the ring, especially... with Brett and the Rockers. Very entertaining.
Mr. Fuji, what in the world is going on? Did I see you tonight in the Survivor Series turn on Demolition?
Let me tell you, Gene, I made the Demolition. I made them champion. When I made them champion, their britches got too big for them. Their head was swelling up. They thought they're no more than the master. So the master in turn hunted and searched. And I found these two. And they will demolish the Demolition. And they will make them suffer like pigs they are.
Wait a minute. Stop right there, Mr. Fuji. I'm going to interrupt, if I may. Gentlemen, I don't know if this man can be trusted.
Demolition, Exit Smash. What are you going to do now? You lose Master Fuji. You better kiss goodbye for the World Championship title.
You know, Mr. Fuji, I've got to say this. I think the Demolition did as much for you as you did for them.
No way, Gene! I did everything for them. I made a workout, run, exercise. But they disrespect my discipline. And in turn, this is what's going to happen to them. I turn against them, yes, and they will pay.
All right, very quickly, any comment?
Demolition, you and listen. The Powers of Pain will listen to Master Fuji.
That's right. Right.
Come on, about soon, Jesse Ventura. I don't think this man can be trusted. I really don't. Gentlemen, that's it. Please.
Okay, let's go into match number two. Everyone's coming out to the Warriors scenes. All at once, as well. Got co-captain. A lot of this co-captain business. Brutus Beefcake. The Blue Blazer, Sam Houston, your boy.
Oh, yeah.
My boy. Jumping Jim Brunzel of Killer Bees fame. The co-captain, the IC champion, the Ultimate Warrior, who obviously squashed Honky Tonk Man at SummerSlam 31 seconds for the belts. They're taking on the heel side, coming at the Honky Tonk Man theme altogether, is Captain the Honky Tonk Man, Dangerous Danny Davis, Greg Valentine, The Outlaw, Ron Bass, and Bad News Brown with his Nation of Domination fist pose. Or MK3 Sub-Zero. Blue Blazer here, Owen Hart, he would have been 23 at the time, coming in straight from Stampede and Calgary. He also portrayed the Jushin Liger gimmick in New Japan a year earlier.
Oh.
So he was basically a job guy until he was re-signed in 91 and came in as Owen Hart in the new Hart Foundation. With the Anvil. Actually, Don Morocco would have been on the babyface team, but he left the WWF beforehand. Jumpin' Jim got a nice few payday. This match was just to get Warrior over, and it worked. So, what did you think?
Yeah, he was crazy over, and he was fantastic. He didn't do much, but what he did was just... I mean, even looking back now, I still hate Hogan. But I look back at Warrior and I think, yes, he's just brilliant.
That's the thing, I find it hard to hate Warrior personally, Because even though he's a nut job and he's delusional and he's a compulsive liar and everything, he's never done anything bad to the business. You know, he just wanted money and fame and women and whatnot, and, you know, he thought he was a bit better than what he was, but, you know, he's not like Hogan, who kind of sabotaged pushes and cost money and buy rates and probably turned fans away. And he was over like Rover. Fans adored this bloke.
I remember some wrestler was asking, it was back in WCW, he was asking Hogan, Hogan, you've got $50 million in the bank, obviously, before all the badness. And I was like, why are you still here? And it's like, because I'm only worth $20 million, brother. And I was like, right. And I'll take all you can, I guess. Get nothing back. Valentine, who wasn't booked at SummerSlam, is in free fall until he teams with Honky Tonk Man next year. Rick Rude came up with the name, Rhythm and Blue.
Oh, I did not know that.
There you go. Yeah, lots of jobbers in this match.
Yeah.
Lots of enhancement talent, and we'd see that kind of throughout the night, you know? The commentator single-ish, Bad News Brown, as a loner who doesn't team with anybody, which comes in for his elimination. Oh, that's hilarious. Now, where the commentators say it takes Valentine 20 minutes to warm up, so they're at a disadvantage having him in early. That's so mean. Valentine's shin guard, if you notice this. It was his gimmick that he's had it on for protection, blah, blah, blah. But he'd reverse the shin guard and put it on his calf, so when he did the figure four, it would hurt more. And he called that the Heartbreaker, which he actually does in this match. Beefcake jobs out 3D, dangerous Danny Davis, with a sleeper at 117. This match was cut to shreds.
I actually thought that this match was alright, the fans were for it, but the hard cuts...
It was basically highlights.
They
just to finish it.
Yeah, they infuriated me. I was... I really angry towards the end of this, you know. Why was the show cut up so much? Was it to fit it on like a 3-hour cassette and put Piledriver on or something, or
yeah, it was to cut it down to 2 hours. So,
but cassettes are 3 hours long.
Well, back in the day, you get a cheaper one for 2 hours. So, what are you gonna do about it?
So get on the internet.
So why? So why did they cut this match? And not the first match, which was 45 minutes long.
I have no idea. Because the second match was, I think, 17 minutes, and they cut it in half. If you cut out 10 minutes out of that other match, no one would notice. You know?
Absolutely not.
Bad News Brown grounds Jumba Jim with a ghetto blaster and pins at 512. Obviously, not our 512.
This is, this is about 12.
Yeah.
Sorry, 0-12.
Brown walks out. He gets counted out after Hammer nails his partner by accident and causes dissension. Yeah. Then Bass power slams Sam Houston and gets the three. The highlight for Mr. Bass. Honky pushes the Blazer off the top rope and Valentine applies the Heartbreaker and gets the submission win. So we're down to three heels versus two faces. So we got Honky, Bass and Valentine versus the Beefer and the Warrior. Beefer and Honky Tonk Man's feud splutters to a non-finish as both men get counted out. So it's
that's the second time in this show. Second time in two matches that we've had two people get a double DQ via countout.
Mm. I thought the Blazer was great. And yeah. I thought he had lovely kind of wrist lock into a Hurricanrana. Very nice. You know, my thoughts on Owen Hart and...
they're positive, aren't they?
They're all positive, but if you remember me giving out about Martha Hart's book, it was terrible. But
she was very bitter in it.
Yeah, very, very bitter. And...
understandably,
she's you know come out and admitted that she's probably watched two or three wrestling matches in her life. Yet she goes on about Owen being high flying, and I really didn't see much of that as when he was Owen Hart. Okay, yeah, I mean he came off the top rope.
He did the missile drop
kick.
I think in the '80s that is high flying though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but when he was the Blue Blazer here, he was much more high flying than he was his Owen Hart.
Like Jumpin' Jim, he didn't jump at all. Like, well, he did have his finisher, the flying bum tackle though. So, you know, he was classed as a high flyer just for that.
But yeah, a very
well, on that and he's B like.
But yeah, very impressed with the Blazer. It's crazy, the sleeper was so over.
Yeah, yeah. That's what happened. See,
Million Dollar Man. I reckon just that gimmick gets that move over. Do you reckon?
Oh, yeah, back in Ed Leslie was over back in the day as well.
Oh, that's right.
The
sleeper as well.
Yeah, sorry.
I think it's a case of the move is over. So when that move is applied, you don't get out of it. That's the finish.
Yeah.
So everyone goes mental when it goes on because they know that's the end of it.
How did Ed Leslie get away with wearing pink and black? Why did Red not punch his face in backstage?
He's not
that's my fucking gimmick.
I've been wearing hot pink for a while, I think.
That's true.
You know it over green.
Sorry, as I was saying, the sleeper hold. It's a glorified rest hold, you know? It's just terrible. Terrible, terrible move.
It doesn't really bother me. If you slap on a rear naked choke to someone, they're going to sleep in 8 seconds. That's it.
But it's not a choke, though, is it?
It's a blood choke. It's not a air choke.
Yeah.
These days in the Fed, they do these kind of fake bullshit MMA moves. Like, oh, this is like my version of a triangle choke, which is just, you know, here, just sniff my ball. I was like, that's not a hold, you know. I was like, you know, I don't know. Maybe they think wrestling fans can't tell the difference, but just in a generalized, you know, I'm just holding the arm or whatever. You have to apply a move, you know.
Mm.
Anyway, so Warrior steamrolls the competition. You get a double clothesline and double axe handles, and the Warrior picks up the win.
What was that all about?
Survivor.
I mean, he didn't even hit it. Like,
an axe handle, and you're pinning two people. But where was his splash? That's what I want. We should be up in three.
Saving that for Mania. The big splash off the canvas.
I'd really like to have seen the whole match and decide for myself if this was a good or bad match. But with the hard edits, you just can't, because it was absolutely butchered down to about 3 minutes. So,
you get, you know, 8 decisions in 8 minutes kind of thing.
Booking-wise, job well done. Match-wise,
Too many jobbers in it. Too many... Who are these guys, you know?
Yep, so after the match, Bad News Brown cuts a quick, decent promo, saying that his partners are idiots, and he fluffs his line about wanting Savage. Something that doesn't happen today, really, where wrestlers today, they're kind of contained in their own storyline. Like, you'll never hear Jack Swagger talk about, oh, I want Cena for the title, or, you know, I want Mark Henry. They only talk about who they're in a feud with, which is not very real. Everyone should be going for the world title. And that's, everyone has an axe to run. Like, Macho Man, as soon as he came in, even if he's not feuding with them, he'll start slagging off Tito Santana, and he'll say, oh, as soon as I get the IC belt, oh, bad news for Hulk Hogan. This, you know, it's like, there you go, this is reality.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gene. Joining me now, Bad News Brown. And Bad News, during your time here in the World Wrestling Federation, you have pretty much become a loner. And you prove that very much tonight.
I've been a loner all my life. I was raised on the streets of Harlem. You depend on nobody but yourself. And it was obvious tonight when you saw my own teammate hit me. The man is stupid, idiot. I don't need nobody like that. And as far as surviving goes, I survived on the streets of Harlem for many, many years, and that's not important to me. The only thing that's important to me is getting my hands on that so-called cheese champ who calls himself Randy Macho Man Savage. That's all that's important to me.
Well, there you have it from Bad News Brown. He wants to be the next World Wrestling Federation champion. Thank you, Gorilla. A break in the action here. Standing alongside me, Bad News Brown. And Bad News Brown, since joining the World Wrestling Federation, you have been a very independent soul. You very much proved that tonight. What happened out there?
Let me tell you, Beer Belly Sharecroppers, one thing. I smelt a conspiracy out there when my own teammate attacks me. I know that everybody in the World Wrestling Federation wants to be the first one to say that they beat Bad News Brown in the ring, but it's not going to happen. And let me tell you another thing. Survival Series means totally nothing to me. I've been a survivor on the streets of Harlem all my life. And there's only one thing that I'm concerned about, and that's the World Wrestling Federation Championship belt.
Yeah, I thought the interview was terrible.
So did I, actually.
He said he buried the Survivor Series, or the Survival Series. He said it doesn't matter to him, he just wants the WWE title. And I don't know. They're trying to get over... I mean, this is the second Survivor Series. They're trying to get it over as a concept, and he's burying it. He's only Bad News Brown. I'm sure nobody is listening, but... Still, and then he says,
You can whack that ghetto blaster appropriately nicely, you know?
He's going for the belt and he wants Savage, and he's been sending letters to Jack Tunney.
Please! I think that's him, they're just trying to get over him as a loner, and I'm not, I don't want to be around other people. But as you said, he did two things at the same time. Like, he
got it's like and, 20 years later and they're still trying to do the same shit with Big Zeke and, you know, what they did with Ahmed Johnson and stuff like that. Just
racist. Okay, so we cut to a classic Warrior promo where he puts over the faces and that. And when the done was done, it was all over. Sure was. I always thought it was cool seeing Warrior post-match like without the face paint.
Because,
because he'll never, like, it's, I found it's kind of rarity because he'd never come out without his face paint. You know, Sting does it all the time.
Yeah.
Put on my glasses today. But, like, with the Warrior, he'll always come out in his face paint, and depending on how gassed he gets in the match and how much he sweats, you might get to see his face. So that was kind of cool.
I always thought as a kid that, you know, if his face paint is gone, you should put on a pair of, like, Timmy Mallet glasses or something. Just to hide his face. I wonder how many people have a clue who the fuck Timmy Mallet is.
Substantially less than Rob.
Back onto this promo, I thought it was difficult to understand what he was saying. He just came across like a bit of a gobshite, but my goodness, it was awesome. I don't care if I can't understand, if you seem like you have a learning disability, you're fucking amazing, end of story.
Like, yeah, Hogan has his babyface promo style, Savage has his babyface promo style, here's a new one, completely different and just as awesome. Okay, match number 3, coming out one at a time to Jake's music. So we've got co-captain Jake Roberts, Ken Terra, Tito Santana, the Scott Casey.
I actually have Scott someone written down. I never got his name, so couldn't be bothered to learn.
And co-captain Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Before we see the heels, we get some nice planted signs. Giant Killers, Hacksaw Jim and Jake. And a snake bite is better than a rude kiss.
I bet you it's not.
I take the kiss.
He's a rude.
They're taking on the heel side of co-captain Dino Bravo with Frenchie Martin, Harley Race, who looks like such a fucking jobber in that Survivor Series t-shirt, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, who's also in the t-shirt,
who also looks like a jobber.
And before the neon spandex,
big time,
Ravishing Rick Rude, and co-captain Andre the Giant with Bobby Heenan. And yeah, Gorilla immediately steals Bundy's moniker, calling Andre a condominium with heat.
He just keeps coming up with it.
He is on form tonight. Yeah, so this is the pay-per-view debut of Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, the former AWA champion. He got the Mr. Perfect gimmick. So we'll see what Terry Taylor got. Scott Casey, you're wondering, is the babyface jobber from Texas. He actually holds a win over the Red Rooster. Oh, spoiler alert. Yeah, he looks like Ron Bass.
Boy, he just looked like absolutely no one out there. You know, he could have thrown out me and a onesie and let me get pinned and it'd be no better or worse. I thought Jesse Ventura at the start of this match was absolutely brilliant when he just went absolutely mental on Jim Duggan, saying he's out of shape, he shouldn't be a co-captain, he's a nobody, he's a jobber, kind of thing. Great to have Jesse Ventura back after having superstar Billy Graham on the last show.
So Rude hits the Rude Awakening to Patera and gets the 3, and see you later, Ken Patera. He can take a ShamWow and go home. So Bravo denies Casey a roll-up and counters with a side suplex for the 3. Actually, Scott Casey, he obviously he's a jobber for lots of like Sheik, Honky Tonk. You know when they have those wrestling challenge and it's like a star versus a jobber and gets the shit kicked out of them. But yeah, that's him. This was his big night, obviously. He trained in Booker T. JYD was supposed to be in this match, but he left before the pay-per-view, so Killer B himself, Brian B. Blair, he got the nod, you know? But he knew he'd be a jobber, much like Jumpin' Jim, so he quit as well. So they're like, oh.
Really? So these guys are quitting rather than having a payday?
Yeah.
Because their gimmick meant so much to them. That's a different era. Oh, man.
So it's like the next person that comes around the corner gets a pay-per-view pay. It's like, ka-ching! Scott Casey. and much like many, he worked in a car dealership post-retirement.
Nice.
Gorilla exclaims, what a curious pace of this match. And I was like, man, it must have been shit. Yeah, so Tito kicks out of Race's pile driver. He sneaks in a Valentine bump worthy on the timber spot. He downs Honky, or downs Harley Race after his trademark flying forearms match. Andre is butt great here. He's like a dominant big man, you know, slaps, chokes, butt bombs. He counters a sunset flip and sits on whoever gets the three. The crowd pop huge for Duggan as he comes in and starts wailing on Andre and gets him the tied in the rope spot.
I love that spot. They don't do that enough in wrestling nowadays with like Big Show and stuff like that.
I did not like this match at all. I thought it was so slow, punch kick. It looked to me like Jake didn't want to know. It didn't seem like he was into the match at all.
Maybe he was waiting for his baggy backstage.
but yeah, the crowd loved Andre. Yeah, Duggan, not so much Jake. I mean, he got his DDT in at one point. Yeah, the crowd popped, but I didn't get the feeling that he was as over as I've seen him before.
Well, it would kind of be a bit of a sine wave, really, because this time last year being 1987, he was over crazy huge, and then at many afterwards, not so much, and not so much here, but it'll come right back up again. So mm-hmm. It's like kind of two peaks in his career, and he's about to get the biggest push of his career, you know, feuding with Andre. So he'll be back on track in a wee bit. So I did think it's cool to see different wrestlers interact. Actually, going back to Rude versus Snake, they did interact, but I just didn't think it was enough. It was just over far too quickly.
Jesse just kept on bringing up, like, Cheryl Roberts. Who is she cheering for? Blah 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 blah. Mm.
That was all Rude, actually. Putting Cheryl Roberts on his tights and being a heat magnet for that.
Yeah?
That was all him, yeah. So Duggan gets cheap shotted by Frenchie Martin and gets his 2x4 and hits Bravo and gets DQ'd. So Jake, fuckity fuckballs, it's 4-on-1. Rude, Bravo, Perfect, and Andre versus Jake Roberts by himself. And he doesn't do a honky tonk man run, he's actually stays in place. Like a face shield. Jake hits the DDT on Rude and gets the three, and that is actually the end of their feud. That's that. Like, they did have a match at Saturday Night's Main Event a month prior, and it went to a DQ, and Andre interfered. And so
did any match in the 80s end clean? Because from watching these shows lately, and we give out about nowadays, but my goodness, it was far worse than the 80s.
I think Survivor Series is the worst of it.
Like, yes. Yeah.
There's 10 falls in every match or whatever, yeah. So only two of them are actual jobs. Like, the only people who job are the jobbers. The big guys rarely job, but it does keep them strong. But I guess it's not too bad because there might be, let's say, 6 or 8 Saturday Night Main Events and 4 pay-per-views, so you don't give out about your DQ pictures as much as it was for every week, you know? Yeah, Andre storms the ring and chokes the shit out of Jake.
He also bit him in the corner. That was great.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's actually a bit earlier in the night where someone was getting pinned and then Andre came in the ring. And I was like, why is Andre trying to break up this fall? Anyone on the team should have went in.
Well, no, actually, I won't say anyone because you did have Harley Race on the team.
He's probably getting another prison tattoo, was he? Alright, so Andre repeatedly choking Jake, he breaks on 4 until he slips up and goes over the 5 and gets DQ'd.
He doesn't break on 4, it's the fucking ref goes 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. he does it on the 4th time, he finally counts to 5. And even Jesse the Body was like, just what's this ref doing? He's stupid, he's wrong. It really pissed me off. Like, you know, rules are rules in wrestling, you know. I probably say this every month, but you know, a rule should be kept there. You can't change a rule just to suit the match. It should be there. You should book around the fucking rules. It's not difficult.
I didn't notice myself. I thought, like, holy shit, Andre, he's booked like a fucking killer. Oh, it was great. He was just like, because he was never really that heelish with, you know, WrestleMania 3.
He was never a very violent wrestler, you know. He was always kind of cartoony. But, he was just getting the corner, just mashing his poor face out of it.
I think that was kind of a killer edge he had, you know. So that was one up on his Hogan feud, because it felt more like Kane and it was kind of brainwashing Andre. previously, you know.
Yeah, I thought it looked great, that spot, but then when he's DQ'd, he just kind of very politely released and off you went down there. You know, it just like the light switch went off. You know?
Booking wise though, it actually made sense because it was kind of like job done. Because you know he gets DQ'd, Roberts falls, and he just gets pinned.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. This match was gutted so badly by editing that I can't even tell you if it was good or bad.
Still, editing didn't bother me. I quite enjoyed it. And yeah, so Perfect picks up the pieces and just gets the immediate pin on Jake without a move for the three, and wins the match. So the heels win. Ventura just gets over how generous and magnanimous Andre was for sacrificing himself for the heel team. Yeah, so the winners and survivors, Mr. Perfect and Dino Bravo. And Dino Bravo's theme plays, because at this point Perfect doesn't have one. So.
That's right. Andre doesn't have one. And also played for the walkout as well.
That's right, yeah.
So he got a song played twice. Canada's Strongest Man, mm-hmm. who eventually went on to be murdered by the Canadian Mafia.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Is that still alleged? Or? Admitting that. So Jake actually then he no-sells the last 5 minutes by clearing the ring with Damon post-match.
Ventura even says, oh, I don't think Jake's going to recover from this. The next thing is shot. Squandering around there.
All right, so how was that match? Was that right? I quite enjoyed it, no?
I enjoyed the booking, but the editing destroyed the actual match.
I enjoyed the finish and the match itself. It's, not boring.
Okay.
Why wasn't Andre in the main event?
Well, there's four matches, so there's four things they try to get over, and so there's four feuds, so it's like Demolition versus Powers of Pain they're building to, second match get Warrior over, third match get Andre versus Jake over, fourth match get the Mega Powers over.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, one and one, so time for this, time for this, time for this, time for this, everyone gets over.
When you put it like that, this show actually kind of,
makes sense.
It's actually job done, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even though the matches suck balls, but job done. Well done, guys.
This is an enhancement paper, basically.
Yeah.
We cut to an exclusive home video interview with Andre with Heenan and Sean Mooney, where Mooney and Mean Gene actually hint that Andre is secretly afraid of snakes. And then they interview Jake in the same locker room set. Like, this is supposed to be, 10 seconds afterwards.
I'm just over here. Slightly to the left.
Different corner. It was and he gets over how serious the choking was from Andre, and it was like being, in a vice of a snake.
I actually thought that the Jake Roberts promo was the best part of the whole show. I thought it was fantastic, and I thought that even Andre's promo was pretty good, because normally you can't understand what he says. I thought it was pretty good. So this little minute block was awesome.
Saved the show.
Yeah.
Gene joining me now, Bobby the Brain Heenan, the manager of Andre the Giant and Andre the Giant. Now, Andre, you promised before this matchup that your team would indeed win this Survivor Series match, but I have to question the means by
just
which you
like
did it.
Last year, I promised you I would take my team to victory, and I did, right?
Never lied yet.
What a good family we are, right?
The best family. And I love to see that miserable Jake Roberts in that corner choking and gagging. You see, without that miserable serpent he's got in his hands, he's not so tough, is he? He couldn't do nothing against this man.
Well, let's talk about Damien a bit. I mean, is there a phobia involved here? I mean, just...
What are you talking about, phobia?
Well, are you afraid
no,
of...
No,
I'm
no.
afraid of what?
Nothing.
I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of anybody. And Jake, I just show you today, I'm not afraid of you. And even you, Frito Santana. Jake, I know you're mine anytime.
Co-captain Andre the Giant and his team of five victorious here at the Survivor Series. Let's go back to you, Gene.
I do not envy Mr. Mooney. Quite obvious to me, Andre the Giant, a very tough customer, not only in the ring, but also on the spot for an interview. Obviously, we have witnessed a phobia. Andre the Giant, no doubt about it, is afraid of snakes. The fear is so evident to all that have seen it. Right now, standing by with Jake the Snake Roberts, once again, let's go to Sean Mooney. Well, thank you, Gene. We just witnessed a spectacular matchup here involving the team co-captained by Jake the Snake Roberts. And Jake, you suffered an incredible beating here. First of all, I want to talk about the fact that you DDT'd Ravishing Rick Rude after suffering an incredible beating.
I didn't do too bad, you know, when it was 4-on-1. I fought back a little bit, you know. I'll tell you something, brother. I ain't no crybaby. No, sir, you want to send 401, that's fine. Here, slap me around like a little punk, huh? Treat me like a little baby walking around on my hands and feet, man, crying. No, sir, I ain't going to cry. This is a business, and I take care of business. Damien takes care of business. And if you think that was something, survival series, brother, you got a year. You got a year. You got what you wanted to tonight. But in the next year, my man, I'll get every little bit I want from each and every one of you. And Giant, my big jolly friend, you won't be smiling. No, you choked the life out of somebody, brother, but you're going to find out this is one snake that does survive.
Okay, this one is far from over with Jake the Snake Roberts and Andre the Giant. Jake, let's talk quickly about the choking that you received from Andre the Giant, which put you out of the Survivor Series.
What can you do, man? The guy's hands fit completely around your neck. It's like a vice squeezing the life out of you. All I heard was a referee counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. The man doesn't break. Man, there are rules. But you know something, if you'll just tell me what yours are, I'll be glad to play by them. And if you don't want rules, Giant, give me what you got, big man, because I got something special for you.
All right, we are getting ready for the big fan event here tonight of the Survivor Series. You've got your big band prepared for action tonight, Slick.
Exactly. Believe me, the big hour is drawing near, and the brain and myself have spent a many an evening putting our wits together, brother, and we've come up with a system of elimination that will not be denied.
All right. Bring it, Donner Man. Ted DiBiase.
Thanksgiving. Who cares? The only thing I give thanks for is the size of my bank account. But you, Hercules, you are going to give thanks tonight because you are finally going to realize your position in life. That is as my slave. Gentlemen, the caviar and champagne are on ice. We are going to celebrate right tonight.
All right, we just been in a Survivor Series of
Kings. Hey, brothers, call Survivor Series. And you looking at survivors.
All right, very good. The Brain, Bobby Heenan.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm going to show you something that I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be showing proper respect to King Haku, and so is everybody else.
All right, can the Red Rooster talk?
Can I talk? Yes, I can talk, and wait till you see me wrestle. Brain, I won't let you down.
You never have yet.
All right.
Now we'll all bow for the king.
All right, King Haku, and finally, Big Boss Man, possibly tonight you could be right across from none other than Hulk Hogan.
First of all, the Big Boss Man's a survivor. My team's a survivor. Hogan, our paths are going to cross again. You remember what happened last time. One thing's for sure, boy. I'm going to hurt you bad, leave you laying like the dog you are.
You gentlemen, as they head to the ring, get ready for the big man event here in the Survivor Series.
Those guys are sort of counting their chickens before they hatch. The Doctor of Style, Big Co-Captain Haki!
Alright, so it's time for our main event! We got the Jassol Brothers, the Jassol Brothers, the Twin Towers, Akeem, nearly Christmas, obviously he was Oh My God with Slick, the heel Red Rooster who was doing the Gracie train with Heenan,
yeah.
And King Haku with the Brain. And the Million Dollar Man with Virgil, and co-captain the Big Boss Man. Well, Slick's already in the ring, so yeah, everyone's got a manager, haven't they? So we're taking on the co-captain, the Macho Man with Liz, Coco Beware, Hillbilly Jim, Hercules, man, we are going down the pecking order.
Yeah.
And co-captain Hulk Hogan, who's the only guy who gets his own theme.
Yeah. Jeez. Did they never actually make a Mega Power song?
No.
No?
They didn't mash up the songs either.
No. Like, not necessarily mash up, but, like, they could have written a song.
Yeah, anyway, King Haku, you were wondering, there was, because where was King Harley Race? And obviously,
I assure you, I was not wondering that.
Why not? I'm going to tell you anyway. Ray suffered a back injury when he was wrestling Hogan, and so he gave his king gimmick to Haku, who would defend said gimmick to the returning Harley Race at January's Royal Rumble. So he leaves and then comes back in a few months.
Can you think of a worse wrestler to have that gimmick than Haku?
Billy Gunn. Like, I guess they're kind of trying to do this kind of opposites kind of stereotype.
I'm a savage, but I'm royalty.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be alright, but they didn't actually give him any character. They just slapped a crown on him.
Oh, it's
like, get
stupid.
Out there, mate, you know?
Yeah, it's completely stupid, alright. Yeah, a lot of comedy gimmicks and basically, you know, mid-card jobbers in this match.
Mm.
Actually, just with Hercules, a month prior, Heenan sold Hercules to $1 Million Man to be his personal slave. And to wear assless chaps as well.
And, you know, get a mask off. Axe and smash.
None of it. They're fantastic. So Hercules has none of it, and he attacked Heenan, so he turns face officially. But he was jumped by $1 Million Man and Virgil. Yeah, a week before that on TV, Gene was invited to deepest, darkest Africa, aka some street in Harlem, where Oh My God was transformed into Akeem.
He had strangely effeminate hands.
Didn't he?
And he was walking out to the ring kind of with one hand on his hip,
yeah,
giving it this, singing the song. Was that his gimmick?
Well, he wasn't gay.
I look like I could bash you, but when in reality I just want to spoon you.
I butt bash you like.
What? I just thought that was really funny.
He was just trying to be black, and that's what that's what he thinks black people do, apparently. So, no, I'm serious. But anyway, when they changed him and gave him this gimmick, they got a lot of angry calls and letters for it.
So was that his team that he came out to?
The Jigsaw, bro. Now he's coming out to Slick's team.
Oh, that's Slick's team. No.
Yeah, everyone, you got to come out to the manager's team. Jesus Christ. So, Macho Man, he should come out to Liz's team, though.
Don't treat me like a man.
I don't know, that Dixie song. I want you in me.
And the man in Saran ring. And only when he is out can I walk free of pain. Randy hits the elbow drop and a very never mind. Who's watching this match? The professional running gag, Red Rooster, he's first out. And I thought it was great. Heenan apologised to the other heels for the Rooster's performance to the big jobber status.
Did he? I actually missed that.
Oh, man.
That's really good.
That's one way to get over it. Like, he's at a disadvantage with being, you know, a big cock. Like,
fuck, man. This guy.
His gimmick is that he loses, and Heenan is like, oh, what the fuck is this guy? I am so sorry I managed this guy. Until he basically gets fired by Heenan and turns face. And, you know, gets the support of all of his Rooster Boosters. Like, is there any way this gimmick could have gotten over? How could this gimmick get over?
As well as a cop.
They make him like a top head or
He rules the Rooster.
Fuck, I missed that one.
We'll have a lot of pay-per-views with him in it, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I actually thought that the opening of the match where all the faces were kind of fighting to see who goes in first, and then Macho Man just kind of said, fuck this, I'm champion, I'm going to take charge, and he kind of pushes out Hogan, and I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was really awesome booking.
Cool. Yeah, it was just thinking, just a bit of a demotion for DiBiase. I know, you know, wins and losses and that, but just losing the last two pay-per-view main events, then the Twin Towers being co-captains and not him, and that sucks. Although, it was kind of the same with Andre, where he had to share the co-captainship with Bravo. They're just making new people, pushing new people. So, yeah, that's pretty
good.
Which
I'm fine with.
This is a pretty nothing pay-per-view, so why not push new people, Although everyone they pushed in this co-captainship, they never made an event. Like, Keem hits the 747, aka the world's strongest flesh, on Hillbilly Jim to even the sides. Then,
do you reckon women think that the Rooster has really awesome pecs? I'm so sorry for that. They pop into my head.
Come on, do you know?
He's awesome pecs.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, you know, he the giant cocker, he'd blow it on many occasions.
God, here we go.
You alright, Steve?
Okay.
Akeem cuts off Coco and Big Boss Man finishes them off with a Boss Man slam.
How fat was the Boss
Man? I was just about to say that. He looked terrible.
But like, he lost, he must have lost, what, 50 pounds?
Yeah, Boss Man, I think a big problem is that throughout the night, like, his kind of tummy would jut out and it would start opening his shirt.
Yeah.
Which is quite hilarious.
Yeah.
He probably should have worn, like a football jersey kind of material and, you know, just paint the buttons on. as opposed to having an actual shirt that you button up.
Could he not just have a gimmicked shirt made up?
Yeah.
No, I'm sure that's possible.
Just sew buttons on as opposed to having functioning buttons.
He looked shit, but he's huge. He's absolutely massive.
Yeah. What a brilliant gimmick. You can't fault the gimmick.
Yeah,
initially really great teamwork for the Mega Powers, so this is kind of the only part of this match that you really got to take note is the Mega Powers. Initially, they're working really well together.
When Bossman was selling for Hogan, he... this is amazing. He got hit, and he did this sell where he kind of turn and look at the lights and do the robot when he's selling. You did not cop it. It's fucking amazing. You should definitely go back or at least add it in or something. Really, really funny.
Coco, beware. He's got the hard head gimmick. Somebody hit his head off the turnbuckle and he's like, no. I said, you can't do that to Coco.
It's fucking hell, man.
It's every show because Taku has that gimmick as well.
Yeah.
He's like you said, Junkyard Dog. Well, yeah. Dynamite.
The Brit. Hercules gets distracted by Virgil and the Million Dollar Man gets him with a schoolboy and then pins him, which happens immediately to him with Macho. And gets the pin as well. So now it's three heels versus the Mega Powers. And we get a long, long ass Ionian nerve grip by Haku on Hogan. Man. He really, oh my god. And he actually stops the Hulk up with, no, why doesn't anyone else do this? Stops the Hulk up with a thumb to the eye.
Not that, bad.
That's how you stop a Hulk up or a warrior. You know, if it wasn't for the Hulk up, the heel would win.
Yeah.
You know? Big Boss Man celebrates after hitting the Boss Man slam on Hogan, but the ref admonishes him. He was like pushing his arms down. It's, no, stop celebrating. He's like, I'm just quite happy putting my hands up. Yeah, I'm never going to hit this on a Hogan again. And he's like, no, you can't celebrate. Like, I never said I pinned him. Obviously I didn't. You know, anyway. Big Boss Man bottles the top rope splash.
Oh, man.
Oh, terrible. Bad.
Fucking hell.
The fucking Vicky Guerrero hog splash. Do you have anything before I go into the finish? Well, I thought the last 10 minutes of this pay-per-view was awesome.
From
working out huge to it.
From when Hulk gets cuffed to when he gets free, those 10 minutes.
Off the business.
No.
So bad and boring, yeah.
That's the only time where the heels get one over on Hogan.
For what? All of that 10 minutes?
It was great. Alright, Slick grabs Liz and pulls her to the entranceway, and Hogan intervenes, and in the schmoz, the Big Boss Man handcuffs Hogan to a bottom rope, which is not, so he doesn't have access to the tag team corner, the faces, so that means that Macho Man can't tag him in at all.
Yeah, not that he could do much anyway, yeah.
But I thought this plays in really well, because the Boss Man would get counted out, and he batters Hogan with the nightstick, so it's technically 2-on-2. Boss Man hits Savage with the nightstick, well, he's already out, so Akeem gets DQ'd. So technically it's Haku versus the Mega Powers, and good luck, Haku. Hogan is still handcuffs, and there's a great shot of Slick taunting Hogan with the keys. And Haku's in control of Macho, and there's some great shots of, like, Macho getting battered and he goes to the corner and then he's kind of where the fuck's Hogan, you know? Oh, it was great. Pat Patterson was at ringside.
Was he?
He was just with his arms crossed and doing nothing.
Kevin Nash me
pay-per-view payday. So Savage can't tag out. Liz eventually gets the keys from Dan Slick and Ventura says she's stealing his wallet.
That was great.
Of all people, every face in the company, Liz stealing the wallet. And so she frees Hogan, and he gets the hot tag, he dominates, and Hogan quickly gets the win with the big leg drop.
He killed Haku.
Mm.
King Haku.
Yeah, so the Mega Powers are the... They say this all the time, it's like, the sole survivor means that you're the only one left, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the Hogan and Savage, the sole survivor.
Yeah. And it's not just the commentators that say that, it's announced.
Mm. Yeah.
The sole survivors are, I think it's every single one.
Mm. Yeah. So there's a fantastic shot of Hogan lifting Liz in celebration, and, you know, Savage is just getting his wherewithal, and he sees it, and oh, he's pissed off. And it's like,
yeah, I'm totally with you there. I thought it was absolutely amazing foresight and booking. It's awesome.
I can't dispute that. It makes me look forward to the next page.
Yeah, totally.
He comes around to it and he still celebrates. And then there's a post-match interview with Ventura and Savage where Ventura really pressures Savage about it. And he's like, oh, I saw something in your eye. What was that about? And Savage fobs it off. Ventura relishes that there's like the start of the cracks in the mega powers, that the faces are having problems, and he's marking out to it. And I have to say, Hogan and Macho actually came up with the year's worth of storylines, really? Punctuations, all ahead of time.
Really?
So before WrestleMania 4, they were like, this at WrestleMania 5.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Dope.
So yeah, that was the end of it. It was just basically, this match was just to show the Mega Powers, they're a face, but there's something a bit rotten going on in the Mega Powers.
Mean Gene, I'm here in the dressing room with undisputed World Wrestling Federation champions, Randy Macho Man Savage. Macho Man, I got a question for you. When you won the Survivor Series, and you were standing in the middle of the ring with Elizabeth between you and Hulk Hogan, raising both your hands in victory, I saw Hogan peering out to the crowds like he always does. I saw Elizabeth enjoying the adulation, but Macho Man, I saw something a little different in your eyes. What was going on, Macho?
When you saw Jesse Ventura, was the eyes of determination, yeah. And now possibly the eyes of victory, yeah. The eyes of victory and the eyes of determination is what was happening at that particular moment, yeah. You got nothing on me, man, no. Won the match, yeah.
I understand victory. I understand determination, Macho. But I saw something else. When that match was over and the lovely Elizabeth was up in that ring with Hulk Hogan, and Hogan had the 24-inch pythons wrapped around her, Macho Man, I don't want to know what was in your eyes. I want to know what was going through your mind at that moment.
What was going through my mind at that moment was to be the sole survivor, which I was. One man was the sole survivor, and that was the Macho Man, Randy Savage, yeah. World Wrestling Federation champion, yeah. That's what I am now, and that's what I am now. Yeah, now I am. That's okay, man. Not right now. Now, I'm going to attend to some new business right now. You understand that? I'm done here, man. I'm done here, yeah. I'm the sole survivor, yeah.
New business? Ha. I think there's a little bit more to all of this. Back to you, Mean Gene.
Survivor Series concept in general, I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Like, I think a pay-per-view suffers is if there's no belts on the line, or at least even something like King of the Ring, there's something on the line. I know it's only a crown or whatever, but even a title shot as it became.
Mm.
But you know, with the Survivor Series, you get matches. A lot of wrestlers, I mean, they might have individual feuds, but they're just lumped into teams. You know, with other than I hate this guy and he hates that guy. There's no real reason for them to be wrestling. The matches are generally very long, and the wrestlers get gassed, and because of that, the quality suffers. Love the match if it's two different stables, either four or five guys wrestling, like, say, DOA versus Los Ferris.
Yeah.
That, for me, is the pinnacle of the Survivor Series.
That's not 97.
So, you know, in general, as a pay-per-view, like, one Survivor Series match is absolutely adequate.
Would you like a women's one as well?
No.
I quite like the Survivor Series, mostly because it's a bit of a roster. It's a roster gut check. So it's like, I consider it like the poor man's Royal Rumble, where, you know, you get to see 30 people in this one. You probably get about 30 people as well. I know you get some fuck finishes, but it's quite a nice occasion. And overall, what do you think of the pay-per-view?
I thought it was very poor. Now, and honestly, I did pop the tag match. It was the best match. After that, just nothing. There was just until the very, very, very end, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But other than that, I mean, it's your standard pair kind of stuff. And I mean, as a Survivor Series concept, it did what it was supposed to, and it pushed people. But I mean, I'm just in general, the matches weren't of high quality.
I pretty much agree with that. Unlike Steve, I thought the tag match was the worst match of the night. I thought it was appalling. I thought the main event was the best match, mainly due to the booking and the kind of basically the Hulk and Savage and the end. The Jake Roberts, Andre and Warrior promos were all superb. They kind of raised the show a bit, but overall, very, very poor show. I have 3.5 out of 10 written down at first. Now that I've thought about it a bit more, I thought the booking was awesome. 4.
You know, with
that's still so a fucking caution, something.
We're so generous. With 5 being average,
yeah,
it's definitely lower than average.
Okay. I actually quite enjoyed the pay-per-view. That said, I was zapped of all of my will after the first match, so after the first 40 minutes, I have to take a break. And watching the rest of the pay-per-view with Breeze, I quite enjoyed it. So I see it, first match I'd have to give like a 4, but the other part of the show I'd give like a 7, so that probably averages 8 is what, like 5.5 or something.
That's okay.
Like, there is nothing...
So better than average?
Yeah, slightly better than average, huh?
Okay.
Oh, 1987. So myself, like, I thought the pay-per-view, it's most memorable for like the number of debuts you see here. So like the Brainbusters, the Rockers, Perfect, Blazer, Scott Casey, you know. I mentioned already, like, DiBiase getting demoted, Twin Towers, Haku giving a spotlight, and we see it with Andre. He's now in a feud with mid-carder Jake Roberts, bringing him up. That's great, mm-hmm. You know. The awesome drama by Macho Man. I love the closing 10 minutes of this. I love the mega powers, the slight cracks in.
But that was amazing.
Yeah, the very end.
Yeah.
But one of the worst things here, like, unfortunately, they got a lot of jobbers, you know, filling out the numbers in the Survivor Series matches, which I imagine this is why they stopped doing so many Survivor Series matches. Like, you have too many jobbers on the card. Like, Sam Houston, the Killer Bees, not as the Killer Bees, the job guys with the Survivor Series t-shirt, Dangerous Danny Davis, Ron Bass, Conquistadors, and obviously ShamWow, fucking Patera. Yeah, first match far too long, over 40 minutes. Warriors match is too short. They cut it in half. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. Like.
Best match I have, main event, of course.
Although I love the finish of the main event, I thought Warriors match was done quite well.
I thought the editing was so
shit,
severe that you're... Yeah. I just don't think
they could write the judges. First 2/3 of the match and left unpaid. So,
and
best match,
tag match for me.
Split on this one. It's really, really bizarre.
And worst match, it's a toss up between the
Red Rooster. Do that. Sorry, fuck me.
No, this is going to be awesome.
He's got next... more puns than the Killer Bees.
Yes. I can't wait.
Oh, God.
When's he going to retire? 4 years.
And then, yeah, it's for the worst match, a toss-up between the Warrior match and the Jake match. MVP, it's probably going to be the same for all of us. I'll go for Savage. I thought he was, even just his facials, everything that he put across at the very end of the pay-per-view, I just thought was phenomenal. He set it up so well.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I loved his selling. He was selling for Haku.
I don't have Macho. I've gone back to the usual, Jesse Ventura, with, wait for it, a special mention to Smash. Because I thought he did so much work in a tag match. He was in and out every 5 seconds.
A lot of clubbing blows.
Special mention for Smash.
Excellent. So, Mr. Roydy, probably not go to Smash.
Oh, no, it doesn't. I have 4 names down here, actually. I have the great Jim Powers, of course. Warrior, obviously. The British Bulldog and Rick Rude. Take your pick from them all. They're all ridiculous.
I think I'll go for Rude. Because he looked just ridiculously ripped, like crazy ripped. And I suppose looking at Warrior and then let's see him at WrestleMania 6, what it looks like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The show would be all the better if it was 4-on-4. I know you lose the clever tagline, you know, from 87, but...
Teams of five, stretchers of five.
But I think that the quality of each match would be better because you have less clusterfuckiness, they'd be shorter, and you get more matches in the show. I just think it'd be much better with 4-on-4.
That's a fair point. That's what they did in a few years
ago. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And actually, talking about 80s phrases, where's One Man Gang with, like, 88 was great, but 89 is mine.
That's good.
So, yeah, all right, let's go to the Wrestling is Awesome segment. Now, today, I've actually picked it out ahead of time. We're going to go watch The Running Man, starring Jesse Ventura as Captain Freedom.
Oh, fucking yes. I love this. I actually want to watch this movie and do a full review. I love this movie.
Awesome!
Captain Freedom to Wardrobe. Captain Freedom to Wardrobe on the double.
Forget it, Killian. I won't do it.
It's not a request, moron. It's an order.
I don't need this crap. This stuff is garbage. Killing guys like this 10 years ago with my bare hands. I'm not going for any of these tricks. This is a sport of death and honor. Go to the gladiators.
Cap, will you spare me the combat zen speech? What the hell's the matter with you? Can't you see what's going on out there? This isn't a game. They're betting on Richards up there.
Bullshit.
Get out of here. Get him out of here. What's the matter? Steroids make you deaf?
Excellent stuff. So yeah, I think really good show today. I'm very happy.
Really good show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay. So we better wrap it up. So from Mr. Rosie.
Yep.
From V1.
Take care.
Spike your hair.
Yeah. By the way, Jose Hogan calls a $1 million man a multi-$1 million man.
Multi-$1 million man.
That's very complimentary. Though. You know, it's like calling, sort of Brett calling Sean like the very sexy boy.
He's just that handsome man.
That's an amazing point, Steve. The very
what a cutie. Like. I tend
or you know going out and telling Billy Gunn that, you know what, Billy Gunn, you have a great arse.